Welcome to the Pints and Polishing Podcast, the most influential and listened to podcast in auto detailing. Welcome to the community.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pints and Polishing Podcast. This is Nick. You can find us at hypercleanstore.com or check us out. Today's episode's coming from the Hyperclean Specialist Group. It's an Ask Me Anything. So what happens here, people go, I put a post out when we run these episodes in the Hyperclean Specialist Group, and people submit their questions, and we have a lot of good ones today. So let's go ahead and get started. From Brian, I think you have mentioned before, but what are some podcasts or YouTube channels you follow that cover new, used, and auction markets? I always enjoy when you and Marshall Hill talk about this stuff and would like to be better informed. I appreciate that question, Brian. I'm glad you enjoy those episodes. I think it's an important part of the podcast because at the end of the day, you can be a DIYer, a prosumer, or a professional detailer. And I think this is the market, right? You're in the car business. Here's some bad news for you. I don't think there are a lot of good podcasts or YouTube channels covering the new and used car markets or the auction markets especially. So I'll just tell you what I do. I have a login to Manheim through a dealer buddy of mine that I've had for years. So that's a good reason to have dealer relationships. So I can go in and look at the Manheim results. There are some industry publications, and they're slipping my mind right now because I haven't looked through these questions, guys. I answer them as I read them. And so you're looking for something called the Black Book. You're looking for Manheim auction results, especially when you're talking about the auction and the used car business. New cars, look, man, I stay up to date. I like Doug DeMuro. I enjoy his channel, again, just to kind of see the new stuff coming out and little things that are going on with the car, like the new 4Runner, Land Cruiser, that kind of thing. But I don't listen to podcasts or YouTube channels on this part of the market at all. If I listen to an automotive podcast, it's really just because I like listening to those guys bullshit about cars. So that's kind of what I do. You know, you got people like the Smoking Tire or Spike's Car Radio, or, you know, all kinds of different people doing stuff. Cars and Bids now has one. But if you want to really be up on, you know, what's going up and down on price, it's Bring a Trailer, P Car Market, carsandbids.com, those types of, and I monitor those. So that is a daily habit of mine that I monitor all of those auction sites. And you can, you know, have somebody on Fiverr build you a scraper and go through all the results if you want to get that deep into it. But at this point, man, I mean, I've been buying cars since roughly 1999. I have a pretty good feel for it. I'll get off this podcast. I'll have 50 to 75 text messages just when recording this. Most of that stuff will be about cars, people looking for cars, people wanting to buy something, sell something. And so a lot of it for me is just feel what's going on in the market. But I do, for the auction side of the business, you know, stay up with Sotheby's and Gooding and all of those different kind of companies like Bring a Trailer. And I just go to those sites and click on cars, go down. They have a results button of what those cars have been selling for. I do have a spreadsheet that I keep for cars that I know people are looking for, that what's going on in that market. And I'll build them a spreadsheet saying, hey, this is what's kind of going on. It's very, very primitive and easy to do. But, you know, it's just about kind of looking around the internet for that stuff. I mean, that's what it really is today. And I think if you're wanting to be more informed, just do some searching around on those auction sites. Try to, you know, Google Manheim auction results and, you know, what's going on. There's some publications, it's just slipping my mind, that tell you where the used car market is, percentage up for the month, that kind of thing, percentage down, those types of things. But I get all that stuff through Manheim itself because I have a login to that site. Appreciate the question. From Keva, I have a 76 Mercedes 250S that I will be doing paint correction on. What combo would you use? Old school wool pad with a rotary two-step process, or could I get away with a one-step? Here's the truth. There could be a ton of paint on this car. There could be thin paint on this car. You're going to have to figure that part out. And it's all going to depend on damage. There are a lot of older cars, older paint systems that you can get a tremendous amount of correction out of a good one step. Okay. And for most classic vehicles, I feel comfortable with a one step. If somebody really wants to chase elite level, that 95, 98%, 99% correction, then it's absolutely wool pad rotary two-step process. And the reason is rotary works so good to just cut. It's easy on your body, easy on your hands. It's easy to control. And so that it would be my two-step process would be rotary with some kind of compound that finishes down well, that doesn't leave a ton of haze. And then I can easily just correct that out with a nice polishing step. But this is all going to be dependent on the situation of that car, what the owner wants. We do a lot of one steps on older cars and get tremendous results. And I think that's something that most people automatically want to go to a two-step process. Sometimes if you don't have a paint depth gauge that makes you feel comfortable or whatever, then just go one step. But if somebody wants it two-step and there's enough paint, absolutely, I would go with a rotary and a wool pad. Brian Mildren, what's your thoughts on special teams, special plays, special players? Tuesday. Yeah, man, I'm a sketch guy. That's been fun, man. It seems like a good dude. Hilarious. If you guys are not up to date, Sketch makes me laugh every time. He's got great one-liners. So, yeah, I do like special teams, special plays, special players. If you started a mobile business in today's market, would you focus on washing vacuums or would you focus on ceramic coating installs? I would do a hybrid of both. One of the things that we see happening is guys abandoning basic services, thinking that they're going to make all this money in the ceramic coating world. We do a combination of all that. We do basic services, ceramic coating, PPF, tint. We do all that stuff. So if somebody's getting started, one of the things that I think people don't realize about basic exterior and interior details is it creates that customer as a warm lead to your business. Okay. When I started in 2010, I wanted warm leads. How do I get a warm lead? Give them a basic service. Then at the end of the service, I will point out, hey, we can fix this scratch. We can make your paint look better. We can do a ceramic coating install. We can do a sealant. We can do this. We can do that. So I think a lot of guys struggle at start not doing basic services because they don't realize those customers turn into bigger leads by being warm to your business, right? So I think Brian would probably agree with this. He's been in business a long time as well, is that guys are not only leaving money on the table, but they're leaving warm leads on the table because they want to get somebody on a $1,000, $1,500, $2,500 ticket, and they're finding that hard to do. Well, that's an easier ticket to sell if I've already been in business with that person. So I would use the basic detail to get myself in with more people so I could sell them more coating, right? And here's where guys, I think, that are doing ceramic coating only aren't doing the math. And I know Brian has a retail store and he sees this a lot. Let's say the guy gets a $1,000 ticket on Monday to do a ceramic coating install. Doesn't work Tuesday, doesn't work Wednesday. So by Wednesday, you've effectively only made $333 a day, right? Because you did the $1,000 job, you sat for 2 days, now you're only making $333 a day. By the time you get to Thursday and you don't have any more work, you've only made $250 a day, right? And so what people don't realize is that this sitting around and sitting at home thing and trying to get ceramic coating installs only, you're losing money because you're sitting idle for so long. Now, if you want to do this on a part-time basis and you're only doing it on the weekends, then that's a fine plan, right? Because you're only able to maybe work on Saturdays and Sundays. And so if you could just get $1,000 a week, another $4,000 a month. But I think the part people don't really focus on is getting people into your business is the secret of business. So when you're starting out, you make this barrier of entry really high price point, the problem is going to be that you're going to have fewer people you're interacting with. If I interact with 200 people a year and you interact with 50 people a year, my business long-term is going to be much healthier and much more lucrative because I have 200 people in my business that I'm servicing on some level with detailing, and you have 50 people, right? And if you look at it today, We're picky about the type of customers that we do basic services for, but if I think somebody has an opportunity to be a great customer, I'm going to take that new business. We don't do a lot of sitting around. My business has no downtime in it. We have nowhere else to put people. Right now, we're booked 4 to 6 weeks out at any given time for a service. And so if I'm booked out no time, I'm doing a lot of basic services. Number one, because it's good money, but number two, to get warm leads into my business to talk about my elevated services as well. That's a good question. From Kevin, he's got a two-part question. From someone who is about to jump into distribution, are there any plans for marketing materials, especially for the coatings? I want to also become a Sparta installer to keep everything the same, but I like to have stuff to give customers or stuff in the shop they can look through. Kevin, this is going to come down to personal preference. I have gotten millions of dollars worth of marketing material from PPF, Tint, and ceramic companies I've worked with in the past. All that stuff went in the trash. I never once handed it to any customer, never had it sitting out for any customer, never thought of it as a sales point for the customer. I realize that people fall one of two ways on this. They like it or they don't use it at all. I'd say most people who have done this for a decent amount of time don't use it at all. Because A, customers don't really read that stuff the way you think they do. And when they read it, they start to misunderstand, and I don't get to explain it to them. We obviously know that there are a select few people that want marketing materials. We are going to put our heads together and come up with some good stuff eventually. Is it a high priority right this second? I won't lie to you and say that it is. But I also think the world's changed. Our website has great descriptions on everything. Most people want to go to the web and be able to look at it on their own time. They don't want to carry brochures. Even if you look at new car dealerships, you used to walk in there and get a whole binder worth of stuff. Now you hardly get it. You don't get anything. They'll send you to a website or whatever. So I would say that I've never used it. Most of the people that I've grown up in this business, they throw all that stuff away. But I understand it's just a personal preference issue. So I appreciate the question. The second part of the question is, any plans for other coatings, as in leather, wheels, fabric, and full transparency? We do have all those things in plan, okay? All those things are in testing currently. And when it comes to leather and fabric, we're just trying to find something that we can believe in. I don't want something that exceedingly clogs the leather. I want it to still be breathable. For wheels, we want a certain level of durability that we're still looking for. And fabric's one of those crapshoots. It, you know, on a driver's floor mat on a daily driver, fabric coatings don't last super long because of the abrasion of getting in and out. But we are tackling those, and I would expect you'll see some additions to our ceramic lineup this year in 2024. So yes, I absolutely know that we are going to be adding that stuff. From Brandon, can you wash a car too much? Look, man, it just depends on the human being. If you have a great process, you can't wash a car too much. If you have some flaws in your washing procedure, you can wash a car too much. We have customers that want their car washed, car detailed, multiple times a week. And we've had those people for 10 years. We have other people that want it done once a week. We have other people that want it done, you know, once every 2 weeks. Those are pretty limited in our business now, but we're a weekly company. We believe in weekly maintenance. You can wash a car too much if you don't have an elite level process. There's no question you can cause a lot of damage. If you have extremely soft clear coat, Honda S2000 comes to mind always for me on this. Yeah, man, you can get a little crazy and it can create some work. But here's also what I like to say. If you really care about your car, you're probably going to be giving it a very light polish every 24 to 36 months. You know, even if it's a light polish on a 5-year coating, if you're a real picky person, you're just going to want to, you know, get the little love marks out of it. Again, that's a minor part of the market, but that's probably where I fall in. You know, give a nice light polish to my car once every couple years just to brighten it back up. And even if I have a coating, I know I can do that without removing the entire coating. Plus, we have a product coming out that'll make it really easy to maintain that. after something like that. But here's the deal, man. It all comes down to your process. And if people want it done, then do it. You know, it doesn't matter. I would say that I'm a big believer in once a week on daily drivers, because I think people lie to themselves about how long they spend in their car and how much they do things and how much brake dust can accumulate and how much this and how much that. So I think it's a really simple thing for me that I like the once a week. But do we have customers that are on 2 to 3 times a week? We do. They're just picky. They want their things clean, and I'm okay with that too. From Justin, what's different about this compound polish that's in development? When is a hopeful time frame to release it? Would it be possible to use it to polish on glass? Polish on glass, every compound and polish can be used to polish on glass. If you mean remove scratches, no. There's no compound and polish that does that. A combination of a glass-specific polish and a rayon pad would be your best bet. A lot of times when it comes to deep scratches and stuff like that, replace the windshield. Or go to a windshield company to have these elaborate machines and systems that can remove those scratches if it's a valuable windshield that can't be replaced easily. But you can use anything that we develop to polish glass. I mean, it absolutely works. What's different about it? Well, I'm very picky when it comes to compound and polish. Marty can tell you that. He probably gets frustrated at times with me about this, but I'm very picky about it, and I want certain things and certain abilities. First of all, I think a lot of compound falls in between too harsh or too weak on the market. There's too many compounds that cut too heavily, and there's too many compounds that cut too little. Excuse me. So we're trying to strike a balance with a pad system and a compound and polish system that make it pretty easy on any car you would see. From a polish standpoint, I want versatility. I want to be able to really get a good cut, with a stronger pad. And I want to be able to get a really fine finish with a softer pad. And I think that's tougher. You know, I've seen some of the new stuff out, and I get sent stuff all the time by companies, and I'm appreciative of that. But I also think that there's a lot of people using formulas from companies they left to now have at their new company. And so you're not actually getting a new compound, a new polish. You're getting a redeveloped one from a company they just left. And you guys can figure those ones out, hopefully. I'm looking for something hyper-specific that most people wouldn't be looking for, and it's hard to put into words. You just know it when you see it. We're very close, if not done, with compound and polish, but we have some other things we want to develop. We want to do some AIO stuff that makes it really, really simple and can be based in a different type of sealant where it's not just polymer-based. We want to also have a one-step product where basically we mix, you know, the amount of cut you can get and the amount of finish that you can get and get it to a place where you can really start getting on most paints a 65 to 85% finish by just doing a thorough one-step. And so I think when you look at our system, more than likely we're looking at probably having out of the gate 3 to 4 options for different types of things you'd like to do. In the time frame, we're hoping in the summertime. I am sitting here on my desk right now. I have 4 different bottles of different things. We're on versions, 15 or 16 in this testing alone. And I'm just looking for specific things that are hard to put into words, but you'll notice them when you use them. I don't like things that are tough to wipe off. I don't like things that react really poorly in heat. I don't like things that heat up very quickly. There's a lot of compound and polish that people don't realize they struggle with because the compound and polish and the lubrication in that formula heats up super quick. And it really reduces a lot of things that I like in my polish. So I can't really say that there's one thing that makes it different. It's just something you know when you know. And I have a lot of things. Right now, guys, I have probably 2 compounds in the world I trust and 2 polishes in the world I trust. Think about all the compound and polish in the world. There's only 2 compounds, 2 polishes that I even like a little bit. And that's been the case for a lot of years. And I was in product development for a bunch of companies on compound and polish, and I always thought they kind of underperformed. So it's just, we want to do it our way. And again, we hope you guys really like it, but it's very specific what I'm looking to get out of these products. From Nick Tollier, do you ever polish and coat inside of fender lips, like on a lifted truck where they are seen? Look, man, if somebody's paying me to do that, if that's involved in the package that I've sold them, then absolutely. If I sold them a very, very quick one step just to kind of knock the oxidation off, et cetera, then in most cases, no. It's one of those things, man, that you have to understand that whatever somebody's paying for, I'm going to do. If they're not paying for it, I'm not doing it. So if you've charged somebody to do that, or if it's your own truck and you just love your truck, then absolutely take the time to polish those things. If somebody's paid me to do it, then absolutely. I would always say that I pretty much 100% of the time slap some coating there because it's easy to do. But do I always correct them? Hey, man, if somebody's paying for a simple one step, you know, an enhancement type thing, no. I mean, anybody telling you they do that are wasting time. But if you've charged for it, and to give that level of care to the vehicle, because I know you're doing this on the professional side, then absolutely. If it's your truck, go ahead and do it, man. You love your truck, do it. If somebody's paying for it, do it. So again, we get into these types of questions, which I think is a great question from Nick. I want people to understand, I do what people pay me to do. And I don't do less, and I don't do more. The reason is because they're paying me to do a certain job. So if you come up on a lifted truck, make sure you're talking about to the guy if he wants that done. If he wants it done, make sure you're ready with what that's going to cost him to do. Because remember, a lot of times, not always, you have bolts or fasteners under there that you're going to have to polish around. Some of you may not have those machines. You may end up doing it by hand. So understand, just charge for it. That's where I'm at on that. You know, charge for what you're doing. From Dustin, is there room in the budget to get Marshall Hill a new set of wheels for his Jeep, preferably something produced within the last 15 years? I drove that Jeep here not too long ago. I'm going to say something a lot of guys, Dustin's a truck guy, Jeep guys, lifted truck guy, doesn't like. I think most of the shit now looks terrible. I know you guys like your fuels and your methods, but I'm like, okay, man. Again, if I change the center cap of his wheel, do people think it looks out of place? Probably not, right? Because I'm not a big fan of what I, and we buy a lot of fuel and methods for guys that have TRXs, Raptors in my business, you know, regular trucks. They love that stuff. It's okay. I mean, I see, understand why guys like it. I'm just like, whatever, man. I don't think those wheels are that nice. And when you're talking about, you know, getting a set of wheels for $1,500, $2,000, let's all be fair about something. Those are not high quality rims. It certainly can dress your truck up or your Jeep up, but you know, $2,000, $400 a wheel, $500 a wheel, it's not that expensive in today's money, right? But if you like them, you like them. Hey, Marty likes his wheels. I'm cool with it, man. Run with it. It's not my Jeep. It's not my truck. But I see what you're saying. Your boy might need an upgrade here. Dan, does the condition of windshield matter when applying coating like chips or deep scratches, or should it be replaced first? That's a good question. First of all, the condition of windshield's about contamination first and foremost. So if I had a really old windshield, I'm definitely taking a cutting pad and some compound and I'm cleaning up that windshield. That would be first and foremost. Chips are not something that's going to, you know, degrade necessarily the coating. Deep scratches, it's going to be hard to fill. I would absolutely replace my windshield if I had a lot of chips and deep scratches in my windshield. But what is going to actually do the most damage is having a contaminated windshield. So run some clay over it, run some compound over it, cut the windshield, cut the grime, clean it up. Then go ahead and do your glass protection on top of that. That's what I think is most important. But a chip is not going to degrade it. It might degrade your windshield wiper blades going over those things all the time, but it's not going to do anything to the coating. But yeah, if I had chips and deep scratches and a lot of that stuff, I'd just replace it if it was economical to do so in your world. But just run some compound and polish over it and get it cleaned up. Get the grime off of it. People are oftentimes very shocked about how much deep grime is on their windshield, even if it looks clear looking outside. So before I did a glass install, we're actually going to have a video on a pretty new Range Rover that we still took the time to run some polish and get it cleaned up, just because it's a good step to do before you put glass on if you have the time to do it. From Nate, let's do this smoking tire podcast style. If you could pick one sports car from the year you were born, regardless of make, model, or brand, with no budget, what would it be? That's easy. Lamborghini Countach, going through the roof. I think it was, what, the 5000S, 500S were built in 82. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. Those are going through the roof. I think they're selling anywhere from $350,000 to $600,000 a piece. I do have to take my shoes off to drive one of those cars. I've driven a few of them. I don't fit so well in them, but from just, I mean, right behind me here, actually, I got a black painting of a Lamborghini Countach. It was something that was on my wall as a kid. It was a special vehicle, so that's the no-brainer for me. From Bill, how often do you guys clean out your vented floor tiles, and what's your process to do it? Funny enough, man, we don't really run into that. We may have a little compound or polish dust under the floor, but you got to remember, we're doing PPF and tint, so we run a ton of baby shampoo and water through the bottom of those tiles every week. The other thing is, I don't wash inside of my shop. Everything is washed outside, so we don't really have a lot of dirt and grime. So actually what I do is I just take a pressure washer and clean off the tops of the tiles that seeps down through them and runs out the back of my shop. If I was in another place, I'd probably look to take out my tiles, you know, after the winter time, after the summertime, maybe twice a year, and go ahead and do that. But for here, man, for the compound and polish dust we then have baby shampoo and water seeping down through the floor and running out every day. We kind of have a self-cleaning system here, to be honest with you. So we don't deal with a lot of contamination or anything like that here. From Dustin, does Connor's return to UFC bring record views, and have you watched the new Roadhouse? I haven't watched the new Roadhouse. Fact of, I'm not a big movie guy. I wouldn't mind watching it, but I haven't seen it. He's probably going to break a record when he comes back, I'm assuming. I think I saw this week he's coming back at 170 to fight Chandler. I mean, he essentially hasn't had any power at all since 45. So obviously he's been a little geared up, if you know what I mean, for a while. So I'm anxious to see him. But, I mean, we haven't seen an elite-level performance from him in the cage for quite some time. I mean, you think about the two Khabib losses and those types of things. We just haven't seen him operate at an elite level. But, yeah, I'm sure everyone's going to tune in. He's the biggest star ever in the UFC, and it's cool to have him back. But, you know, fighting at 170, to me, unless he can, you know, somehow keep all this size on, he really hasn't had elite power since he couldn't make 45 anymore. So, yeah, but it'll be big. From Dustin, GM has entered the chat with their Silverado Fox Factory Edition with plenty of tasteful mods and a Whipple. Will it take the crown amongst the TRX and Raptor R? Small price of $200K. What are your thoughts? Well, from what I can tell, and I haven't read much about it, GM hasn't entered the chat. Fox is actually building this off the Silverado platform. GM is not building it. They're just providing the Silverado, essentially, which is why you're getting the $200K price tag, is because Fox can't do this economically. And I think it's only 700 horsepower. And I say only 700 for a reason. Those are already on the market, and you can get Raptor R's, things like that, for, you know, let's say $150,000, $125,000, whatever it is, with the TRX. I don't really know who this fits. I'm sure there's a bunch of GM fans that are going to buy this truck, but it's being done through Fox. Fox is running this. GM is not. And so I don't know why GM's not going to get into this. I don't know why GM's not just building a TRX or a Raptor-based product consistently and going heavily after that market. Raptor's been around since 2010. Dodge missed the boat, Ram missed the boat, GM missed the boat, and this seems like another thing where I just go, okay, man, it's like buying a Shelby Ford truck. They're cool. I understand it, but I can buy a lot of cool shit for a couple hundred grand. I mean, I just don't see why I would want these trucks. I just don't see it. I mean, remember, if I can buy a Panamera Turbo S with low mileage for 40,000 and get to 550, you know, 525, 600 horsepower, I'm going to pay 160 grand more for a worse brand at 200K. I don't know, man. I mean, these trucks aren't going to construction sites. Let's not all lie to each other here. So, I mean, I guess it's cool it's being built, but GM kind of bowed out and Fox is building it. All right, 700 horsepower. That's nothing these days. Not to, you know, shit on that, but I don't see anything special about it. I mean, I guess if you're a Fox fan, which there's plenty of those people out there that think Fox is special, but okay. I just don't think this is a real effort, and Raptor's going to continue to dominate that market. From Donald, can you put pressure on Milwaukee so they come out with a 3-inch battery-powered polisher? But in other words, what's the recommendation for 3-inch polishers? Yeah, man, I've been disappointed with 3-inch polishers my whole career. If I have to reach for a 3-inch polisher, I'm most likely going to just put an extension on my rotary and call it a day. I see Dale here, you know, talks about his PXE80. I know a lot of people like those. Those are decent machines. Probably the best 3-inch polisher is the compressor run Rupes 3-inch. That's probably the most consistent and the most power 3-inch, but you got to have a big compressor to run it. I have a few Rupes 3-inch. I have a few of the Flex 3-inch. They're okay, but me, myself, I'm just going to reach for a direct rotary and call it a day and just put an extension on my rotary. I've never, ever, ever been impressed with a 3-inch. I've used the Merca. It's a good machine. Is it a perfect machine? No, it's good though. I think it's like $600 or $700 or something. So I guess if you were doing a lot, the Merca would be probably my recommendation at the time, but I've always been underwhelmed. As a matter of fact, funny story, when some people left a certain company and they ended up spreading across the industry, I was in the development team on a 3-inch polisher a company was supposed to build. They actively told me, we are not going to build it the way we should. We just got to get it to market. And I was actually on that development team, and it's still a really shitty machine. So 3-inch, not enough torque, not enough power, constantly stall out. So I'll do 3-inch rotary most of the time. From Conrad, any chance of non-silica waterless rinseless in the works? Would love to see what you guys come up with, especially for wipe downs prior to prep and coating PPF. Yes, we want to do a rinseless that has a little less ingredient in it, meaning from a protection standpoint, something that's ultra slick and you can feel comfortable using. So yeah, we are in development on something like that. Not as easy as you think it would be. But yeah, that's a great idea. And it's something that we've already started to dive into on our side. From Dale, we know many companies have glass coatings and treatments. Would it be possible to develop a ceramic-infused additive to add to the washer bottle so that every time you use your windshield washer, you revitalize the glass protection? This is a great question because one of the things you run into with washer fluid is you're worried about it freezing. So in the summer, you could seemingly run like Eco One and Slick, you know, half Eco One, half Slick, put it in there and give yourself a good experience, but it wouldn't be useful in places that get wintertime. It would probably freeze pretty quickly. But this is a great idea and something that we definitely have thought about. But it would be, you know, essentially a water-based situation that just provides a little protectant every time. I'm all for it, but just remember, the only thing that hurts glass protection is abrasion. So you're still never going to get away from the windshield wipers causing the degrading of glass coatings, right? I put on windshield film. The thing that really degrades the top coat on the windshield film is wiper usage. And so those are just the realities around that, right? So, but no, I think it's a great idea and definitely something that we have on our list. Brandon, when providing uniforms to team members, do you only provide shirts and hats? I made sure both guys had 5 shirts and a hat and gave them $100 to go towards black shoes and shorts and pants. My 5 truck leaders, my 5, you know, guys that have been with me a long time, along with the people in their truck, my leaders have company cards. they buy what they need. Obviously, we have our shirts on file with a certain company here. They go get shirts when they need them. They go get sweatshirts when they need them, jackets when they need them, hats when they need them, and they get shorts, pants, and shoes when they need them. So I don't really get involved too heavily on that. They kind of just take care of it. When it's time to get new stuff, they go get new stuff. They turn their receipts in at the end of the month, and as long as it's not out of whack, I don't really look at it. But yeah, they buy, I think, new pants at the turn of the season, new shorts at the turn of the season. They buy plenty of hats, plenty of pants and shorts and everything, and shoes. I think they probably get 2 to 3 pairs of shoes a year. I'd have to look at it. But I let them handle it. Those guys have been with me a long time. They make sure everything's taken care of and that they look the way they should look. So I don't think there's a right and wrong, but yeah, that's what we do. From Donald, top 5 things you think clients look for when walking into a higher end shop. People are going to hate this answer because so many guys have spent so much money on their shops. I think high end people care that you make their life easier. That's what they care about. They make sure they want you to do what you say you're going to do. Like, you know, at the beginning of this post, I posted a Mercedes that got damaged by somebody being irresponsible next to the car. We went and picked that car up. We provided the service. We returned it. The customer didn't have to do anything. That's what higher end clients want. They want shit handled. They don't care if you have the coolest light set up, the coolest shop in the world. The idea that they care about that stuff is largely coming from people that want to defend that they spent that money. Now, look, man, if that's what you want to do with your shop, I think that's great. But high-end clients, truly wealthy clients, largely never set foot in my shop or other people's shop at all. I mean, I got a drop off. I mean, the last 10 drop offs, I meet them outside. I grab the keys. We inspect their car. I take their car to the back. They have, you know, somebody there to pick them up or whatever. And they don't even come in the shop. So I think people just look for, I mean, have a lobby that's very clean. Most of the time, I'm not a big fan of people being able to look into the shop. It can create a lot of headaches, but there's cool ways to do that. So I'm not against it. But I always say this, all high-end clients want is to not waste their time dealing with their car. So to deal with the high-end client, you need to realize, man, they don't want to be inconvenienced. They just want you to get the job done, get it done right. If something goes wrong, you handle it. That's all I ever see. You know, I see a lot of guys. I mean, Marty and I had a story where a guy was struggling to buy bottles of coating because he dumped $80,000 into his shop that he didn't even own the building. Refinished floors, built it out, all out of his pocket. And more power to him. But then he couldn't afford to buy the coating he needed. This is a true story. I see a lot of guys that think that's what's going to get you higher end clients. And again, if it's you need to spend the money because you're going to get, you know, hit on taxes and you're like, hey, I'll just spend it on a shop and making my shop better. I think that's great. I think a lot of guys spend money they don't have thinking their shop is going to magically attract higher end customers. And I can't tell you how many people I've seen go out of business because they misjudged the amount of money they spent on their shop. Make sure your shop is clean and organized, your lobby is clean, that you speak well, and then make it as easy for those people to do business with you as possible. That's what I think matters to the high-end customer. Bill, if you could go back in time to when you hired your first employee and give yourself a piece of advice, what would it be? Bill, I'd probably give myself 1,000 pieces of advice. It's all on you, man. You got to take all the blame. You got to give all the praise to your team. You got to be a good dude to work for. You got to be a good person. And you got to understand that people are not you, the owner. So you got to find a balance between the times to be hard on somebody and the times to just let things go. There are a lot of people that can't hire in today's world because they are not people that you would want to work for. And I'm sure, Bill, with me saying this, you can think of family members. You're like, man, my Uncle Johnny, I wouldn't want to work for him. well, then he's going to have trouble hiring. If you're a good dude to work for, you take care of them economically, you make sure that you're a fair person, you don't lose your shit every time something happens, 110% of the time, you're going to be okay hiring. That doesn't mean it's going to be easy or perfect or you're not going to have headache. But a lot of people think, I'm going to hire somebody and that's going to mean I have to do less. And the minute you do that, your team picks up on it and you lose. Period, point blank, end of story. So until you reach 5, 10, 15 employees, this idea you're going to put in less work, that's not going to happen. And most likely it's never going to happen. I don't put in less work today than I did 14 years ago. I actually put in more time. So my guys know I'm the first one in, the last one to leave. And I set the standard of, hey man, we show up and we go to work. But if you're asking people to show up and go to work and you take all these vacations, I mean, I know guys that have had a shop or business less than 5 years and they've been on more vacations in 1 year than I've been on in 14 years. They're prerogative. These are also the same guys that bitch at me that they can't grow their team, that they have problems growing their team, they have problems keeping people. Marty and I have known people that have sent us pictures. They're drinking beer at 2 o'clock on a Monday, or they're at home at, you know, noon on a Tuesday. And then they have two team members quit and they're like, what happened? Well, if you're not going to work hard, they're not going to work hard for you. And so those are some things that I wish I'd have known. And also, man, if you think you're just going to yell and scream every time somebody, you know, makes a mistake, you're never going to win with team members. Stuff happens. Best piece of advice I can give you is get your mindset into it is what it is as fast as possible. Take everything, fix everything, take everything on the chin. Still to this day, if a customer calls me with a complaint, I say, I made the mistake, not my team. I made the mistake. I'll get it handled. I never throw my team under the bus. I never talk about who screwed it up or who didn't. I just say, I messed it up. I'll get it handled for you. Your team notices that kind of stuff. I mean, I had a situation where for 3 years we dealt with a lawsuit, a 7-figure lawsuit on a 3-mile-an-hour fender bender that was on camera that my guy did nothing wrong. My guy was distraught. He couldn't believe what we were going through. And every time he had to talk to the attorney afterwards, I'd look him in the eye and I'd say, dude, let me take this on the chin. Let me deal with it. You keep doing your thing. This wasn't your fault. I'll handle it. I got your back. That guy never forgot that. I had a 7-figure lawsuit hanging over my head, and I never let him take any of it on the chin. Did I take a lot of it on the chin? Sure. But that's what I'm here to do. That's what you're there to do as the owner. And the quicker guys realize that, the quicker I wish I would have realized that, things get a lot better. This shit's on you, man. It's not on everyone else. Right? You're going to have to take all the bullshit all the time. That's what you're there to do. And give all the praise to your team. You'll be good, man. Be a good dude to work for. You're going to be fine. From Salomon, thoughts on some new products that say no clang needed. I guess it's interesting. Could be possible, I guess. But there's a lot of stuff that's embedded that I would think you'd have to use some pretty harsh chemicals to get it to dislodge itself. Which is kind of what clay does. So I'm interested. I've seen some of that stuff coming out, but not high on our radar because I don't think claying some difficult process at all. Anything's possible, man. That's the one thing that none of us can have our minds closed off to is a lot of things are possible with chemistry. That doesn't mean everything. But a lot of things could be possible. So if somebody's come up with it, good on them. I guarantee you, you're still going to have to clay certain vehicles and certain times. And I'm betting this is extremely light contamination that they're talking about, which I'd still feel more comfortable just running a quick clay over the car more than likely. But hey, man, if somebody's figured it out, more power to them. Haven't seen anything positive out of that. I've talked to some people and they, you know, call BS on it, but I don't look at it that way. Hey, if somebody's come up with something that truly works, awesome. It's better for all of us. But right now, I think that I'm still in the question phase and would guess that it's really limited to what it can actually do. So, guys, thanks for all the awesome questions. Thanks for another great Ask Me Anything, and we'll see you next week.